Welcome, Stories to Dismember. I am Aaron, your host, and I'm hanging out with my two co-hosts, Ariel, Azriel, and Alexa. Go away, Alexa. How's it going, guys?
Alexa, buy 5,000 volumes of Hereditary.
It's not the only time she pops up in the podcast. She'll start answering questions sometimes when we're talking.
She's our surprise guest today.
Yeah. You just sit there, keep your mouth shut.
She's always.
And if you don't know and you didn't read the title, we are doing the 2018 Ari Aster movie Hereditary. This is a movie we talked about doing forever. Finally got around to do it. It's a lot of fun. Can't wait to jump into it because this is one of my favorite horror movies. I'm sure it's one of yours too. And this week, to give us a little breakdown of the movie and guide us through, is going to be Azriel. You're up, big guy. Rise, Azriel, rise.
So I actually had two birds fly into my window this week, one of which was the day that I had to watch this fucking film. So I was very creeped out. I think we need to do something with a window where the birds don't see the reflection of the sky. So I'm working on that, but not super great. And this movie, even though I've seen it multiple times, still freaks me out to this day. There's just, I don't know, man. Ari Aster gets me. He gets what makes me terrified. And I feel like him and I have the same fears. And that's why I love his movies.
I don't think I've seen any of his other movies, though.
You have Midsummer? Not Midsummer?
Right.
Never seen Midsummer.
No, I've never seen
He Midsummer. Puts so many, like, he puts, like, so many subliminal things in there that you're not really supposed to see. You kind of have to, like, turn your head a little bit and squint your eyes, and you're like, holy shit.
Kind of like with this film?
I think. Yeah, all his films are, well, I don't know about Beau Is Afraid, but yeah, Midsummer for sure is like that, and like this film where he shows you enough to where your mind kind of puts together the horrific pieces of it. And so it's whatever, you know, like your, where your mind goes with its fears. And I think he's good at setting that up. I feel like Beau Is Afraid is also very much like that, but that one's a little bit more like a Wes Anderson film on NyQuil and alcohol.
Like a, he has a new dream. One too, or a newer one called Dream Scenario.
With Nicolas Cage?
Yeah.
Yeah, I want to see that. I haven't seen it in theaters, but I do want to see that one.
Yeah, I want to see it too. All right. Well, we are doing his 2018 movie, Hereditary, starring Toni Collette, Milla Shapiro, and my train going by. Hold on.
Have you guys ever seen Toni Collette in the show United States of Tara?
No.
You've never seen that? So I think it's funny because in this movie, her acting is fantastic. And her mom is a person that suffers from DID, which is a dissociative identity disorder. And in the show that Toni Collette was in, United States of Tara, it's about a woman who suffers from DID. And she has to take on these different personas. And the way that she transforms into the different personas is very interesting, and it just really kind of shows the range of her acting. So seeing her in this movie was no introduction in terms of her acting range. So if you guys are interested in Toni Collette, I would definitely recommend watching maybe a few episodes to see if it's your kind of show, but it's more of like a drama kind of family, like a dysfunctional family film, much like this movie. But a little bit more funny. It was more humorous. And I think it was on HBO a while ago.
Yeah, that sounds interesting. I'll have to check it out.
Yeah, you definitely should. Cause she goes, some of her personalities, or her identities in that show is like this, she plays like a guy. And so she's kind of, you know, wears flannel, and I think his name is Buck. And then she'll play like a little girl who's like 5 years old. So it's kind of wild to see Toni Collette go from like those opposite extremes, and then she plays like a horny teenager. So pretty funny.
All right, you're ready to jump into this?
All right,
can't wait.
So the movie Well, I don't. Wait, who else? I know we mentioned the Tony. Well, I guess it goes the rest of the cast. Yeah, Toni Collette. She plays the mom, Annie. The dad, Steve, is played by Gabriel Bryant.
Byrne?
Yeah. B-Y-R-N-E. Byrne. Okay. The son, Peter, is played by Alex Wolf. And the daughter, Charlie, is played by, oh, you said Emily Shapiro.
Yeah.
No relation to Ben Shapiro. But I don't think I recognize anybody else that, I mean, for me, from any other movies, really.
Joan, is her name Lynn Dowd?
Ann Dowd.
Sorry, yeah. Ann Dowd. Yeah, she's in a lot of other stuff, too.
Is she? Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yes. She's always played, like, supporting roles.
Ah, okay.
She always plays something kind caring of creepy. Mom. Or something like or that, creepy. Yeah. Yeah, she's been in...
I always see her as the caring mother.
She's been in Handmaid's Tale. Have everybody there seen the Leftovers?
I have not yet. No, mm-hmm. I haven't seen that one.
Yeah, that was good.
Yeah, she's been in so much stuff that it's kind of wild. Like, she's in TV shows, too. So yeah. She's one of those recognizable faces where you're like, I've seen her in all this other stuff.
Yeah, she'll pop up and in something. And you're like, oh, I know her.
Yeah, and she always plays like that Irish mother. You know, she kind of has the whole, like, Irish accent to her a little bit carried over and... I was just looking up her movies and shows she's been in, and it says Freaks and Geeks, but I do not remember her in Freaks and Geeks. So
I think she does sing.
Does she sing?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, interesting. I don't remember ever hearing her sing, but yeah, she's in a lot of like horror movies, sci-fi kind of thriller movies, that I've seen her in, at least that I recognize her from.
Oh, she's in the new Exorcist movie.
Yeah, I haven't seen that one. Is that Believer or is there an even? Oh, okay. Yeah, that one just was made available on Amazon Prime, so I got to watch that.
Shout out.
Okay. So the movie opens with the obituary of Ellen Tapper Lee, which you later find out was the mother of the main character, Annie, who. She passed away at the age of 78. She had a illness. And yeah, so it's just basically the obituary in the beginning.
Yeah, it was a good way to introduce all the characters as well.
Yeah.
Because it kind of broke down who everybody was.
Yeah, it says she had a prolonged illness at her... she passed away at her daughter Annie's house. And she says, beloved wife of late Martin Lee, RIP, devoted mother of Annie Lee, Graham, and the late Charles Lee, cherished grandmother of Peter Graham and Charlie Graham. She's also survived by her son-in-law, Dr. Stephen Graham. She'll be missed. And then it says reposing at Kingstone Funeral Home and talks about the funeral services.
I thought this part was really helpful watching it another time around, just because the first time I saw this movie, I didn't make the connection that Charlie was named after her uncle. And so seeing the name, because when they mention Annie's brother later on, I don't think they mention him by name. She just says my brother.
Right.
And so I never really got that until watching the movie all the way through and then watching it again. I'm like, oh, okay. Now okay. I see kind of where, yeah, like from the get go that there was like a connection between naming Charlie after the brother who passed away. But I thought that was pretty interesting because, Charlie was the second born and not the first born. So I thought, well, why the second born named after the brother when he died before any of the kids were born, you know?
Yeah, I think this is one you could watch over and over again and like start, like, I missed that because I missed a lot the first time I seen this.
Yeah, this is like my third time watching it and I still picked up stuff. Yeah, and right. I'm like looking throughout the whole entire film because again, like with Ari Aster, nothing is on like, accident. Everything is purposely put there. It's not like Kubrick level, but it's, you know, there is some stuff kind of hidden in there that you could look for.
Definitely, for sure. So then we get the camera starts panning around in a room. We see a bunch of miniature, I don't know, what'd you call these, dioramas or like miniature sets?
Yeah, they're dioramas.
Dioramas. Yeah, mm-hmm. Okay. And which we later find out this was Annie's, the mom's workstation. This is where she, this was her, basically her job. But she has a few of them set up in the room, and you know, the camera starts zooming in on one particular one. It's of a house, and as the camera starts coming in closer, you know, it's focusing on this one particular room on the second floor. And I like the kind of way it transitions into the actual like opening of the movie of Peter's room.
And yeah, transitions from like the diorama of Peter's room into the real world of Peter sleeping in the bed, which I thought was really cool because you can't really see where it ends and where it begins.
Right.
And even the way the way it's like further back, it almost looks like they're actually in the house. Like, I don't know, the way he did that camera angle. It just, to me, it felt like they were, like you were watching him inside the actual house. But the dad brings in a suit telling, you know, Peter that he has to get up, and he asks about Charlie, his sister, and he finds out that she slept overnight in her treehouse. And the mom, Annie, is just sitting like inside the car waiting. So the family's they're on their way to the funeral home for Annie's mother who passed away. And at the funeral home, we have Aunt Annie. She's giving the eulogy. She in the eulogy, she kind of mentions a couple things that I thought was interesting, saying, you know, the mother led a, you know, private life. And then she does kind of briefly mention about private rituals that she would conduct. And
this was like the worst eulogy I've ever heard. I was like, wow, you couldn't even try?
She was grieving.
Apparently, but she was doing a terrible job just trying to fake it till you make it kind of. I'm like, can we let somebody else talk? Maybe one of grandma's friends could get up here and say some things in a weird language that nobody knows.
Exactly. They do give a when the camera pans over to the grandmother in the casket, we do notice that she has a strange necklace symbol. Which we'll find out later what it was. In this scene, when Charlie goes up to the casket and when she was looking at her grandmother, I don't know if you guys caught that. There was like a guy at the foot of the casket and he kept like giving a weird smile to Charlie.
Creepily smiling? Yeah. Like kind of nodding at her. Like, I got you.
I had a
He's like
a
bouncer.
Times.
Like, why did they need a bouncer at a funeral wake?
You know, these things say anything.
I know, right?
We do find when Charlie's back with her dad, she has this clicking noise that she likes to make. And she has like a little sketchbook that she was drawing faces or people's sketches.
Yeah, she definitely does some stimming throughout this scene.
Yes. We do find that Charlie does have a allergy to peanuts. She was eating a candy bar while she was watching people go up to the casket. And her father, you know, makes sure that ask her about the candy bar, that it was nut free.
I think the mom says too, like, I didn't bring her EpiPen. It better not have nuts in it.
Yes. Yeah, she did.
So we know it's like not just an allergy, it's like anaphylactic shock kind of situation.
But she'll die if she has a trace amounts of peanuts.
Right.
Yeah. So we do go back to Annie in her workshop once the family gets back home, and she's working on a hospital room scene where she's as she was painting one of the doctors, and when her husband kind of interrupts her and comes in. Oh, okay. So it was the scene, I guess maybe was the mom was going into hospice.
Yeah. Which the husband is like very on board with this creepy profession. Like he's completely supportive, and he's like, oh, you're working on the hospital scene again, you know? Right. And even some of like the more, I guess not favorable kind of scenes throughout the movie. Like he's still pretty on board with it until she kind of takes it too far, which I kind of like that he is like kind of the supporting husband.
Yeah. He seems like even with the kids, he seems pretty like supportive with them too.
Yeah. He's not trying to be in control. Like he doesn't have any issues with being in control. He's just kind of there just being like, you know, do your own thing. But also at the same time, he's, you know, trying to keep her on track because she's got like her art show coming up, and he's like, you know, you got 7.5 months, you know, maybe you should postpone it, or do you think you'll be ready? And so it seems like this like art show that she's putting together is like a massive gallery, because she even like later makes a miniature of the art show, which I thought was pretty cool. I was like, damn, she's making miniatures of her miniatures.
Oh, that's right, with the chair, the last thing she was making. Yeah. Right?
Yeah, she was making like a huge room, and she was making the miniature models of the miniature models that she was making. And I was just like, this is wild. Like, this is a really cool art show that I would want to be a part of. Me being, you know, like going to Miniature World.
Yeah, had to take a long time to make those. So eventually the mother goes to Charlie's room, and Charlie, she's in bed. She seems kind of be upset about her coming into her room, and the mom's going through her Charlie's sketchbook, and you know, the sketches of the grandmother laying in the casket. And then Charlie expresses, you know, how she's worried. She starts questioning who's going to take care of her, you know, now that her grandmother has passed away. And you know, the mom starts talking about the, you know, her brother, that they'll be there to take care of her. And she doesn't seem too confident in anybody else taking care of her. So Annie ends up going through some boxes of stuff that belonged to her mother. And as she's going through, she finds a letter from her mom to her. And in the letter, she puts, it was, "My darling dear, she's saying, forgive me for all the things I could not tell you. And please don't hate me. Try not to despair your losses. You will see in the end they were worth it. And then our sacrifice will pale next to the rewards. You know, love, mommy." And Annie gets pretty upset and puts everything back in the boxes. And before she leaves the room, she looks kind of towards the corner of the room, and we can see like an apparition of her mother, and the apparition disappears when Annie turns the lights back on. And then we do hear a voice call out that says, "Mom." And when Annie turns back to look at her miniatures, her dioramas, she goes over to the one and turns it away from her so it wasn't facing her. And we jump to Charlie at school. The kids are...
Wait, hold up.
Oh, go ahead.
Hold up.
Go ahead.
The diorama that she turns around. Did you take a look at what that was?
Was it like a... I know it looked like was he breastfeeding somebody?
Right. So it was Annie breastfeeding Charlie, but then the mom was holding out her naked breast to breastfeed Charlie, like offering it to her, which is really kind of creepy because like when she's reading the notebook about like the sacrifice is worth it and all this stuff, like she's very disturbed by it. And we don't really know kind of the full effect of what that means. But then when she turns it around, the diorama around, I'm like, oh, fuck, this is weird. Charlie was saying grandma took care of her. Now we're seeing a breastfeeding scene with mom and grandma. And it's just really weird.
Yeah. I missed that.
Yeah. Yeah, it was just really weird, like with the whole entire scene from beginning to end, you know, the way it closed out. And I was like, oh shit, this is what we're talking about here now.
Escalating. So at the school, it looks like all the kids are taking like an exam, and Charlie, instead of doing her work, was playing with looks like a toy that she had made on her own. It was like a bottle or something.
Yeah, I don't know if you saw her room, but she had like MacGyvered a bunch of like statues out of like trash and stuff. So that's what she was working on. Yeah.
Trash toys.
Yeah, she just makes trash dolls, you know.
Trash dolls.
As one does.
So the teacher tells you, you know, to play with the toys later and after you finish your test. So, you know, Charlie agrees. And Charlie's just kind of like looking down, and a bird flies into the window. And it seems like everybody else in the classroom noticed it. They heard the sound, except her. Charlie's just still staring, and then she happens to start glancing over at her teacher's desk.
And she's then looking at them scissors.
Yeah, we find later. Yeah, it was a the first time I was like, what is she looking at over there?
Yeah, it's not really apparent what she's looking at. Why that scene is like kind of so long. You're like, all right, what is about this
is
desk
that
I need to be paying attention to? And then she comes out with scissors. You're like, ah, got it. All right. This ain't happening for the bird. This ain't looking good. And at first I thought when the bird hit the window, and I could be wrong, I could have swore it was a crow. It looked very black, the bird that hit the window. And then she goes outside. It's a fucking pigeon. I'm like, okay, was it a pigeon or was it a crow? And I was just thinking it was a crow because of all the other horror movies out there with birds flying into windows.
It was a stunt crow.
So we jump, we catch up with Charlie. Oh, wait, Charlie. Peter in school. And he's not, like Charlie, he's not paying attention to the teacher. He was more concerned about texting his friends about getting high. And then when we catch back up with Charlie, she is outside. She finds the bird that had crashed into the window. And as she's looking over the bird, she pulls out a pair of scissors and decapitates the little pigeon.
I mean, the bird's already dead, right? So
true.
She just wanted a souvenir.
Pretty bird.
Yeah, pretty bird. She wanted to keep its eyes.
And she was eating a candy bar, too, which I thought was funny.
she's
not the most sanitary way.
No.
I like how she always has, like, chocolate smeared on her face, too, because the candy bars are just way too large. I'm like, you know, you can break those off and eat them. You don't have to eat it all at once.
Right. She, so after she decapitates the dead bird and she turns around, she notices her grandmother.
No, I think it was just some random woman.
Was it? Okay.
Yeah, I think it was a random woman in a coat. I don't think it was her grandma. And she's like, it's all for you, Damien. I'm kidding.
that's what the girl said before she jumped, right? Yeah. That was pretty good.
That's just kind of what I was thinking about the whole time these old people started showing up and waving at the family. And I'm like, it's all for you.
So a rando, woman was waving at her creepily. So then we jumped back to Annie in her workshop. And we do get a quick shot of her computer. And she had a website up that says norms on discerning presumed apparitions, methods of communication.
Okay, what the hell does that mean? It just seems like a bunch of random words put together. And then she was painting a little miniature of conjuring spirits. Okay.
But that's what I'm confused. Yeah, she was putting on the laptop too. I'm like, man, she has that purple tunnel.
I was really trying to put those words together to make sense. And I'm like, I don't understand what this means.
Yeah. How did it make it past the editor of this website? Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I guess it was just conjuring spirits.
I mean, I'm no stranger to really long and complex titles when it comes to science, but that one did not make sense to me.
Just a bunch of words. Annie leaves out. She leaves her workshop, and she's about to head downstairs when she happens to notice the door to her mother's room was open, and she goes inside the room. And the room's pretty bare. There's a bed, a dresser. But before she closes the door, we do get a glimpse of what looked like a triangle at the foot of the bed in green, like it was drawn on the floor. And Annie just closes the door, goes downstairs, and then she questions her husband about the door being opened. And he ends up going upstairs to lock the door.
She definitely gets the heebie-jeebies from that. Yeah, I'm pretty sure that was the room her mom died in, because in the beginning part, it said that her mom died at home, I think it was.
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So we eventually jump to Annie going to a grief recovery group, kind of like AA for grievers. And Annie eventually shares, you know, her story with the group about her family and about her mother passing, and then she goes into about her dad and brother all basically had some form of mental illness. She talked about her mother, you know, that she was old, but that towards the end of her life that they weren't close. I guess like leading up to her death, they weren't as close as they originally were. And you mentioned it earlier about her mother having that DID.
Yeah, her mom had DID, her dad starved himself to death and had schizophrenia, and then her brother had schizophrenia.
Yeah, so she went pretty deep.
The apples, the apples on the tree, I'll just, I don't want to be mean, but they're all facing the same thing. And I think even it was alluded to that, like, Annie herself was like, it's not my first time going to these things. So right off the bat, you're like, oh, she's been to a grief counseling session before. And then you kind of get an idea that she herself is kind of like pretty messed up from like her family history. And just the fact knowing that so many people in her family were affected by mental illness, that it's probably assumed that she has it as well, or like people think that she has it just based on that. And so she's probably had to face that her whole life, you know, trying to defend herself as not being schizophrenic or, you know, having delusions.
And she sleepwalks.
Yeah, which is the sleepwalking I don't do. I do sleepwalking and I do scare people, but I don't try to murder people when I sleepwalk. That's one thing I don't do.
That's good.
Yeah. Awesome. I just like walk into closets and start giggling. That's all I do.
It's gonna be creepy. Like...
Yeah, my husband's terrified. That was quite the hurdle when we moved in together. I'm like, oh, by the way, I sleepwalk. And he's like, oh, that's fine. And he's like, by the way, you fucking walked into the closet last night and started giggling at nothing, and this isn't what I signed up for.
Yeah, I don't. It's weird because when I was younger, I used to sleepwalk. There was a few years there when I did it. It's kind of weird. Yeah, it freaked my wife out too. She was like, you know, because I think you're awake. They don't know you're not awake.
Yeah, my eyes are open. I'm talking. I'm not making sense, but I'm talking, I'm saying stuff.
The lights are on, but nobody's home.
Right.
Exactly. Yeah. The lights are on. Nobody is home. Right. So, yeah, I think we find out later, like, she kind of tells a story about her sleepwalking. But, I mean, for as of right now, we just know, like, wow, she has faced so much trauma and grief that it kind of makes sense that she doesn't really process her mother's death in the way that most people would. Like, she's really sad that her mother has passed, but she's not distraught about it. She's just kind of like, you know, kind of somber. But now it makes sense when you're like, fuck, she had to deal with so much death in her life already up to this point. And she even says that her brother blamed her mother before he killed himself, saying that she was putting people in him because he had schizophrenia. And he was like, mom was putting people in me or whatever.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
Yeah, which is important.
Suicide note. Yeah.
Note. Yeah. It's an important note for the story, but you don't really know that your first go around watching this movie.
No, I missed it. So we go jump after the mom at the grieving support group. We jump to Charlie in her room. She has like a arts and craft table where she makes her trash dolls. And while she's working, there is like a weird light that we can see kind of moving about. It's like above her head at first, and it kind of goes around the room. And Millie, or Charlie, you know, she notices the light, and she eventually gets up on top of her bed, and then she just like starts staring out the window. But we don't see what she could see or if she did notice anything. And then we just transition to the mom, Annie, who is she was in the kitchen like preparing food, and then she gets an email from the art gallery reaching out to her, basically looking for an update or a progress report on how her dioramas are going.
We know your mom died, but how are those TPS reports coming? Do you think you can have them in by Monday? Yeah, if you could do that, that would be great.
Because this is still it's the next day, right? After the funeral.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe she didn't tell anyone. Maybe they were like, we all saw this coming. Her mom was like super dementia and crazy.
And then we jump to Charlie outside with the bird's head. She's carrying it. And as she's walking, we do notice that she's basically following a trail or footprints in the mud that somebody left behind. Eventually, we catch up with Peter, and he's asking his mom. He wants to go out to hang out with some friends from school. And Annie, the mom, basically tells him if he wants to go, that he has to take Charlie with him.
You know, he said he wasn't going to drink, and he did not. He did not drink at all.
He did keep his promise on that.
He did keep his promise. She should have asked, are you going to do drugs?
Right.
Because that would have been an accurate question.
Right. So, yeah, he was being honest and truthful. Annie goes out to look for Charlie outside. Charlie is staring off into the woods, and she sees it's just a woman, I don't know, sitting in the grass, and it looked, maybe she was like in the middle of a ring of fire.
No, I do think this is the grandma that she's
seen. So this
is
the grandmother, okay.
Because Annie doesn't see it. Because I would imagine you would, like, as a mom going out, you'd see a woman on fire, you know? But yes. She's like, Charlie, you're not wearing your shoes. So yeah, I do think that was, like, when Annie was doing the eulogy and mentioned the rituals that grandma did, I think that's what they were referring to. That was, like, the ritual that grandma was doing in the woods. And that's what Charlie was seeing from her bedroom window.
Yeah, okay, right. Right. There was another scene, I think it was before all this, when before Charlie asked them, or before Peter asked his mom about going out, when he took a hit from the bong and when he blew the smoke out the window.
Yes, there was somebody another out there standing out. Yeah,
you seen like breath or something coming out, and I was like, man, I don't know, was it the grandmother smoking too? I don't know.
I think you start to understand, like, with the whole funeral and the guy like smiling creepily at Charlie, and then the woman waving at Charlie at school, like, you start to notice, like, there's people following the family. And even in the eulogy, Annie had mentioned the strange rituals and mom's weird friends, or like mom's group of friends. So I just assumed this was grandma's friends that were kind of like watching over the family, but not in a good way. Not like, we're here for you, but more like, we're here for you. You know, kind of context matters. We don't see who's standing outside.
No.
But when we see Peter like blowing the smoke out of his window, we also see somebody breathing at night, and it's cold, you know, so you can see that breath, which is creepy.
Creepy, yeah. And easily, but then it easily missed, because I know I missed it the first time.
You missed that one? Yeah. I mean, oh, yeah, it's pretty subtle. I missed it. It's really subtle. Yeah.
I usually don't pay attention the first time, I guess. So Peter takes Charlie with him, and they head out to the social gathering for his friends from school.
I like the text that he gets where it's like, hey, Aaron's having, well, it just so happened the guy's name is Aaron. Aaron, right. Okay? They're like, hey, Aaron's having a party tomorrow. Bring your dick. Because that girl that he likes is going to be there.
Yeah, the one from class.
The one that's all philosophical and shit, where they're talking about Heracles, I think it was.
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they eventually make it to the party. We do get a quick flashback of Annie in her workshop, and one of her dioramas. Now, this one, I'm assuming that was the grandmother in the doorway, as it was their room, right? The Annie, yeah, and Steve's room. The mother, mm-hmm, was just standing in the doorway.
Creepy as shit, man. That's probably what they had to deal with until she passed away. Just grandma standing in the doorway in a nightgown.
Just another day in the grandma house. So back at the party, Peter does find the girl from class and asks her about, he pulls some weed out asking about if she had the smoke, right?
Well, no, he was like, hey, how's the party going? And she's like, well, you want me to tell you so you can come? Because he's like already there and he's asking her how the party's going.
Right. Yeah. That's right.
Really weird right off the bat. He's not hitting the moves the way he thought he was. So he's like, fuck, I got a bag of weed. And she's like, yeah, let's go upstairs.
Let's get high.
Right. If coming onto a woman isn't working, just pull out a bag of weed, right? That's essentially what this movie is saying.
Right. It's got to work. One or the other. So Charlie does, she wants to follow. She doesn't want to be stuck by herself. And rightly so. Those kids are a lot older than her. But Peter, you know, tells her that there's chocolate cake that they were making. And
okay, but that scene where she's cutting up the walnuts, how many fucking walnuts do you need for one cake? That was like a whole orchard of walnuts that right. That lady was cutting up frantically. Like, who needs that many walnuts? That's my question.
It was grandma's walnut brownie cake.
It was
recipe.
Grandma's walnut cake recipe. First ingredient, walnuts. Get 10 pounds of walnuts. I just thought it was so funny because she was cutting them up so quickly. I'm like, what is this, a cocaine party? Like,
right.
this is like something you would see in like Goodfellas.
Right. Again.
Like, it makes no sense.
Slicing the garlic with a razor.
Right. So he's like, hey, Charlie, why don't you have a piece of cake? I know you like chocolate so much. You just smear that all over your face. And for as many walnuts she was cutting up, you don't see any walnuts in the cake, which is surprising. So maybe they're making cocktails out of walnuts. I don't know.
Oh, that's possible.
Very possible. Walnut Shooters, you know?
And it is kind of sad at that point, I think, when they go back to Charlie after she's, you know, she's eating the cake and she realizes, hey, something's not right. And then she's just kind of sitting there playing and you can hear her wheezing. You're like, well, you know, she has a nut allergy.
Yeah.
That's not good.
It's really sad.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's not, she's like, she knows what's happening. She just doesn't, she's so out of her element that she doesn't really know what to do.
Definitely, for sure. So she goes to find her brother who was still hitting the bong and in a room. And she just says, you know, her throat feels like it's getting bigger. She's clearly having trouble breathing. And, you know, he hurries up and rushes to get her into the car. And then he takes off to the hospital, which apparently is this house to the hospital is like a just like a long, desolate road. So she starts freaking out.
You didn't realize it before, Azrael, but did you notice what was on the pole when they were driving in the daytime?
The first time?
Yeah.
No, but I did realize I didn't realize until later, like, wait, that's the same pole.
You're like, well, no. What's on, like, what's written on the pole?
No, I didn't. No.
Oh, okay. The symbol, you know, the creepy symbol that the grandma was wearing around her neck. Ah. That symbol was on the pole when they drove by it. It was like carved into it. Yeah. Man, but yeah, this is like a really, really dark, desolate road. So yeah. I'm confused as to actually where they live. Because it said California, right? But I don't.
Oh, I believe so.
I don't know which parts of California have like really, really dark roads like that, but also a mountainous background with like really thicketed forest trees. So it's kind of weird that there would be like a prairie road, like an old country road.
Yeah, I think it was California. So as they're driving in the car, you know, he's trying to get to the hospital. He starts speeding up. Charlie's clearly in distress. She can't breathe. She's struggling to breathe. And she eventually rolls the window down to stick her head out the window, I'm assuming in hopes of probably panic mode going on. And, you know, she's thinking maybe to get more fresh air. And as he's increasing speed, there's a light pole that they originally passed on the way to the friend's house. And Charlie gets decapitated. She head smacks right into that pole. And Peter, once he realizes what happened, he just stops the car and he's just literally just sits there for like a minute. Kind of stunned, and I think he kind of tells himself to reassure himself like everything's okay. I know
he was like, are you okay?
Right? But was he telling himself or did he think Charlie was
no, he was asking if Charlie was okay.
Okay.
He was like, he was so like paralyzed with fear. Like he could not face the situation. He was not mature enough to really, I don't think anyone's mature enough to really go through that, but he was just like, could not move. He couldn't even look up in the rearview mirror to see what was behind him. Like he was just could not face the reality at that point.
It's because of the weed. See,
I think, yeah, don't do drugs, kids, because your friends will get decapitated. Right. But also like his acting was really good throughout this whole film, but it was kind of a weird acting for his age because he also like cries like a little kid. It's very strange. But in this scene, we don't hear him wail like a little kid. He's just like, his, you know, tears are welling up and he's just kind of like speechless and frozen. And he just pops the car into neutral and just rolls back home, I guess, like very slowly.
Yeah. And he just gets out, goes inside and gets in bed. And it's not until the next morning he's awake and he can hear his.
Oh, he never went to sleep. He's still paralyzed.
Oh, he just laid awake in bed, right?
Yeah, I think he was paralyzed the whole time. Like, he just could not function at all, like, what was going on. So he never slept that night.
It's not good for mental illness either, if he had it. He's not sleeping.
I think that might be the least of his concerns.
Maybe. Down the road.
Good night's rest.
That's what you need, Peter. Yeah, so so he's just awake all night. The morning, I want to say his mom was talking about going to the grocery store. And then we can hear the door close. Mom goes outside, assuming she sees the car, and she just starts screaming. Let's see. Yeah, we hear, she just starts freaking out. And then we get a view of Charlie's decapitated head in the roadway, just covered in ants. And then we jump back to Annie, the mom, who's just crying, as her husband's trying to console her. And then we just see Peter kind of standing out in the hallway, just, I guess, listening.
The scene is super rough.
Yeah, it's...
She's, like, wailing. She's like, just let me die. I just want to die. Just make it end. And I'm like, fuck, man. Peter's got to listen to all of that. He's going through his own thing. Yeah, it was... I mean, again, Toni Collette, great actress when it comes to this stuff. She's just so guttural the way that she grieves, you know? It's so over the top, but, like, in a real way. You know, like, when you see those funerals where people are, like, throwing themselves at the caskets, like, just fucking wailing, going at it. Yeah, that's what she was doing.
There's a quick, they do, like, a quick funeral scene as the priest was talking. Annie's there crying still. And then they jump to the house where they have family over. And then we do see Peter just standing like in another room. We can kind of see him through a stained glass window.
So I noticed that the coffin for Charlie was blue. And I remember Charlie saying to the mom that grandma told her that she was supposed to be a boy. And so I thought it was very interesting that they picked a blue casket. That Charlie didn't like pink, but I just thought it was very strange that they went with the other, like, kind of binary color blue for Charlie, because of the fact that she had mentioned before, like, grandma said I was supposed to be a boy and all this stuff. And Charlie was kind of non-binary herself in a way. She was kind of androgynous.
Yes. We have a scene when Peter's about to go to bed, and then from his window we can see the treehouse. And there's a red light that turns on from the inside, which we later find it's actually like heaters that they have set up inside. And, you know, Annie's sleeping inside the treehouse. There's a scene at the school. Peter's in class. He's not able to concentrate. And as his teacher's talking, he kind of just glances off. And he happens to see he has a hallucination of, like, the rearview mirror from his car. And it's really quick when it happens, but we can see what I thought was Charlie's body basically decapitated in the back seat, which what it kind of looked like. And then it jumps to Peter getting high under the bleachers. And after he takes a hit, he looks like something's wrong, and he starts grabbing, like, his side or his abdomen area. And he's just telling his friends it feels like something's wrong, and then I think he says that his throat felt like his throat was closing up. So kind of like what his sister went through. He was maybe perhaps feeling it.
He was definitely having like a panic attack. Because he was kind of like a zombie this whole time.
Yeah.
And then he just starts like feeling, it starts coming to him. And then he just starts wailing. And this is when we get the first wail. Where he's like, oh!
Yeah, it's kind of odd for him. Yeah.
Coming out of a teenage boy that's like 17 years old, and he sounds like a 4-year-old.
That's, yeah, that he does. So we go to, I think it's still the same time. It jumps to like the evening. Peter gets home, and as he goes into the house, we see that the mom is just like, I don't know, chilling in the car, laying down, or I don't know if she was sleeping or just sitting there. But after Peter goes into the house, she drives off in the car. And she goes back to the, I don't know if that was a school, wherever they were having that, the grieving support group. And she kind of just sits in the vehicle staring at the people and decides not to go in. And she's about to leave when there's a woman like jumps in front of her car and stops her to talk to her. And she starts telling her that, asking her about, you know, if she wasn't going to go in or not. And then she tells her, you know, she remembers her from the last group meeting that they had from a few months prior. So she introduces herself as Joan, and she shares a story about, you know, how she's been going there and that her, I think, son and grandchild had died. And so Annie explains that originally went there with her her mom to get support, and then now her daughter has since passed. So Joan gives her her phone number to contact her. You know, maybe hopes of later on talking to her if she's, you know, needs help or looking just to talk to somebody about, you know, what she's going through. So we go back to the house, and Annie tells her husband, you know, that she was, or he asks her where she was. I think she says she was at the movies, and she lies and tells him that she's going to go to bed. So her husband tells her, you know, he's going to join her. He's going to go upstairs and go to sleep as well. So, you know, they're now both laying in bed. It's apparent Annie can't sleep. So she gets up, tells her husband she'll be back. And he kind of calls her out, telling her that, you know, he knows she's going up to the treehouse to sleep again. And then from Peter's room, we can see the red light illuminating from the treehouse, which is from the heater. And Peter's just, you know, looking out the window when all of a sudden he hears the tongue click sound that his sister would make. So Peter starts to, you know, the panic when he hears the sound. He starts looking around his room, and he kind of looks over at a chair in his room with clothes on top of it. And it kind of looked like somebody could be there underneath the clothes, like the shape. And then it just jumps to the next morning, the front door to the house. They have one of those like old school mail slots. And there's an advertisement actually on there. It said calling all skeptics, and it mentions a famed spiritual medium. And it was like Suzanne Barlow. It presents an intimate evening of messages from the other side. And it's basically about an open seance that's going on at a convention center nearby. We jump to Annie in her workshop. She's, you know, working on her diorama, and she accidentally spills some paint on her workspace. And while she's trying to clean up, she finds the number that Joan gave her, and she shows up at Joan's house. Which, how'd she get the address? Did she call her first, maybe?
Yeah, I'm sure she called her.
Have that there.
What, they didn't have landlines? Cell phones?
They did have cell phones. They just cut that scene out.
Yeah. Well, she kept just looking at the piece of paper with the number. Right. Yeah, it had Joan's number on it. Did you notice that the what caught her attention on Joan's number, she was painting with vial of blue stuff? It was blue paint.
It was about calling? No.
No, I was just going to mention that same color. Blue is what the same color that they use for Charlie's coffin.
See, another one. No, I
don't know if it really... I just noticed these things. I don't know if it actually means anything, but I just thought it was pretty interesting. I'm like, wait, is she doing the funeral scene too now? Because she keeps doing these different dioramas of what's happening in her life. And I'm like, damn, she really puts these together very quickly.
Yes.
I mean, you know how long it took me just to put my miniature diorama together? It took me like months. She's doing these in like a day.
Yeah, she's a pro.
I know, she's a pro. But she's definitely top in her field.
Yes. She's the foremost authority on miniature dioramas. So yeah, she goes to Joan's or her house. She knocks on her door, and she happens to look down and notice the welcome mat, which has the name Joni and this intricate design around the name. And then she goes inside, and she's talking to Joan. You know, Annie says that, you know, her mother used to make floor mats or welcome mats. And I think Joan just kind of brushes it off like, oh, that's interesting, or what a coincidence might be.
She's like, oh, who? Oh, actually, let's continue on here. She's like, totally brushing it off. That. Yeah. Well, to be honest, like, there's a lot of things that were popular like in the 70s and 80s that, you know, our moms did. And so, yeah, it wasn't like super uncommon that you would see something and you're like, ah, my mom has the same thing. That's weird.
Right.
She's just born of the same era. You know, it's popular at the same time. They never got rid of it. But it is like a handmade doormat. So it is kind of strange but we don't see the mom's doormat. We're just told like, oh, my mom has one that looks just like this. We didn't know it was like an exact copy.
Right, exactly.
That's the part where I was like, okay, yeah, like people make handmade doormats all the time. What's the big deal? And then I saw the other ones and I'm like, oh shit, it's the same thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so at the house they it kind of just jumps into Anne and Joan talking, and Anne's she's getting pretty emotional at this point, and she did have some medication with her, and when she went to take a drink, and I can't figure out what it was, but she did feel like something was in her mouth, and she, like, from her hand, she went to grab it, and it was like something black. I don't know if you caught what it was. I couldn't figure out.
Yeah, so in the conversation with her and Joan, she was talking about how everything kind of just is consuming her, and it just feels like a black tar is covering her whole life, and she just smells it. And I think it's also like kind of stemming back to the fact that Charlie's head was found on the road, on the tar. And so she's just like smelling that, you know, kind of smell of what, after it rains. And then she like takes her pill, and then she takes her hand out, and there's like a piece of black tar in her mouth, which is strange.
Yes. But I'm wondering now, so do you think, was it really tar, or is it her mental illness?
I think it was just a hallucination. Yeah, okay. I think it was just she was just kind of really grieving at that point. And I don't know what the medication was. Usually, I don't know, maybe it's just like social etiquette. I don't take my pills in front of people. You know what I mean? Like, I'm like, hey, can I use your bathroom real quick? And then I take the pills in there. I don't just like pop them at the table.
Right. Yeah. I just say, yeah.
Just goes to show the desperation, you know. And also, like, when I take my pills, I don't get like an instant relief of whatever that pill is supposed to help with.
You want one? No.
They work. Well,
maybe
instantly.
If it's a hit of something, you know what I mean? Or like a bump of something. But usually pills don't act like that.
No.
Unless they're errands.
At one point, Joan does ask Annie about her relationship with her son Peter, and then Annie tells Joan about that she sleepwalks, and she goes into the story about one night that when Peter and Charlie, I'm assuming they were younger, they had to be younger, they shared the same room, and that they basically recovered, that she had doused them in paint thinner, and I'm assuming you think she doused herself, and that she had matches in her hand, and as she had, when she was sleepwalking, she struck the match, and that's when she woke up from her sleepwalk, and Peter woke up as well, just screaming. And then Annie goes on to tell Joan that Peter has basically held that incident that occurred over her head, I guess, like all these years, and that basically he hasn't trusted her since then.
Yeah, I also think it's interesting here too. She kind of gives a little bit of tidbit where she says, like, where she didn't really talk to her own mom for a really long time, and she tried to protect Peter when he was first born. And so she was kind of like no contact with her mom at that point. And she says something that, I wouldn't let my mom have Peter, so I gave Charlie to my mom. And I thought that was very strange. I'm like, that's a weird way to put it. Like,
yes.
And I don't know. It's just really strange.
See, I missed that. Yeah. Interesting choice of words. So then we jump back to the house, and Steve finds Annie in her workshop, and she's working on a diorama of basically the crash site involving, you know, her daughter's decapitation. And then we go to the family having dinner. As they're all eating, Peter's noticing Annie's, something's bothering her. You know, she's kind of just staring at her plate and not eating. She's making faces. And Peter just basically, I think he knew what was going on, and he just antagonizes her, asking her, you know, if something was on her mind or something that she wanted to say to him. And she just basically just loses at this point and unleashes like a verbal assault on him, and just kind of basically just calls him out, telling him that, you know, he's never apologized for being the cause of the death of, you know, their daughter or his sister. And, you know, that he's never admits, you know, for being wrong for anything. And that she mentions about him having like this grin on his face all the time. And, you know, Peter, instead of apologizing at this point, realizing how, you know, upset his mother is, it seems like he just turns the blame on her, like, you know, reflecting it back on her, saying that Charlie didn't even want to go to the party in the first place.
Yeah, they're both pretty shitty to each other at this point.
Yeah.
Because she even made a point, too, like, the reason they can't heal as a family is because nobody's willing to kind of confront the situation, you know, and kind of what caused the situation in the first place, which I don't think Peter necessarily needs to apologize for anything. I don't think the mom needs to apologize for anything, but they're also like disconnected on such a big level that they can't even comfort each other during this time. You know, it's kind of one of those things where grief kind of tears marriages apart because people grieve differently. But at this point, it kind of seems like there's always been a disconnect. And, you know, poor Steve is in the middle of it. Like, we just have a nice fucking dinner. And at this point, I'm thinking, like, Steve, you're trying too hard. You just got to make baked lasagna from, like, a box. You know, like, just go get some lasagna from Walmart. Your nice dinner is not going to hit home like you think it is. It's not going to pull his family together with your rotisserie chicken.
But Peter liked it. It's a really good dad.
Yeah, Peter's like, this is a good dinner, Dad. And that's when the mom like just grimaced at him like, how could you eat, you little fucktard? Right. Go smoke a bowl.
Stoner, yeah.
Yeah. I like how she lays into him, but then he just comes back with that low blow. Like, what about you, Mom?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know? Which, I mean, is valid. I felt like I was kind of understanding every character at this point in time where I'm like, everyone sucks except the dad. Everyone kind of sucks here, but maybe the dad kind of sucks too because he's not really doing much either. You know, he's just making dinner. He's not really being there for the son. He's trying though. He's trying. He's trying to hold the family together.
One meal at a time.
One meal at a time, man. And what does the dad do? Does he work? I don't know what his job is. I'm assuming he was Annie's therapist at some point and then they had like a patient relationship, you know? And so I'm like, okay, well, what? Maybe it was...
That's interesting.
Well, because, well, I don't know how old her brother was. She said he was 16 when he killed himself. I don't know how old Annie was. But maybe she, like, you know, from all that trauma, she probably met her husband as a therapist, you know, at some point in her life, and then they got married.
I like that. That's interesting.
I don't think I'm the only one that assumed that from the get-go, because I've heard a lot of other people like assume the same thing, that that's how their relationship got started.
Okay.
Is that he was her therapist. Which is weird, because Gabriel Byrne was also a therapist in a show called In Session, where he had a relationship with one of his patients that got way out of fucking control. Sorry. It was also on HBO.
Man, HBO's got it all.
Yeah, it's not the first time that Gabriel Byrne has played a therapist with problems, though.
So. Okay, so we do jump to Annie's leaving grocery store, and she notices Joan in the parking lot, and they start talking, and Joan is pretty excited and tells her how she feels turned around after meeting a spirit medium. And she goes on to explain how she attended the seance and that how the medium conjured a spirit of a man from the 19th century. And Joan tells Annie how the medium was able to conjure spirit of her deceased son. And, you know, basically convinces Annie that, she, you know, she should come over to the house to do a seance. Annie doesn't really seem interested in going, but she ends up going to the house. And at Joan's house, it's dark. Joan just has like this candle in the middle of a table, and using this glass, you know, she tells Annie to put her hand on it. And Joan just starts calling out to the spirit, which was Louis or Louis was the name. Yeah. So then Joan begins to ask for the spirit Louis to manifest and to asks it to move the glass on the table. That, you know, they have their hands over, and the glass then just starts moving, which, you know, really startles Annie. And then Joan asks the spirit Louis to, you know, that she wants to ask it some questions, and that, you know, using this jar by moving it in one direction or the other, sliding it to give an answer of yes or no. You know, while Joan's talking to this spirit, you know, Annie seems like she doesn't believe what was going on maybe at first, so she does kind of look at the underneath the table to see if there's something going on which would cause this glass to move or slide around on the table. Of course, she doesn't see anything, and as Joan's asking a question about she asks Louis if you're in pain, Annie freaks out as if something like touched her or she felt something, and she just starts breaking down, like freaking out. And then Joan brings out a little miniature chalkboard and asks the spirit, I think she asks it to write a message.
It says, I love you, Grandma.
Yeah. Does it say Grandma or Grammy? I think it was Grandma.
I think it says Grandma. Because isn't the kid supposed to be like six or something like that?
Yes. Well.
This is the grandson, right? Grandson that drowned? Question. Yes. Was that the grandson? Do you guys think that was grandson?
Well, here, personal take on it, that anytime you're, if you're invoking, you know, these, trying to bring spirits or conjure them.
It's a grab bag. I don't think you'd, right?
You don't know what you're getting. I think that.
Yeah, you're just reaching into like a Mary Poppins bag and just pulling out whatever's in there.
Right.
I think I read somewhere that Joan, the character, didn't have any kids or grandkids at all.
Yeah, so I don't think, I think that was all bullshit too. Yeah, I don't think she had any family really. She probably, and if she did and they died, she probably sacrificed him.
Right.
yeah. They were probably part of the ritual. And I don't, so throughout the movie, we get like these weird sort of like carvings over people's beds. And I don't know what they mean. And they even make a point like, what is that language? So I'm trying to look it up now.
Oh, there was?
To see if. Yeah, if these like sort of incantation sayings are part of like demons or something that they're conjuring up, and if there's like when they do the seance, if there's an order in which these entities come about, but I'm still kind of fuzzy on that. I haven't quite put all the pieces together. Ah. They're there. I just haven't quite put them together yet in the order that, because the names are written over the beds in the order of the way that the people ended up dying, so they mean something in that order. So they're the incantations that she was talking about that had to be said during the seance, but it does, like, in the order that they're written over the beds of the family, that's how they end up dying off.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, so they got to mean something based on the family members.
Okay, you know what, so there was one scene when Annie was working on her diorama and she does write,
she was painting it, yeah,
something, and I was like, what the hell is she writing?
Yeah, I think okay. That was, I think that was like over her bed. And then later we see something written over Peter's bed and we see something written over Steve's bed. But it starts out with Charlie's bed. And I think I have in my notes, I was trying to write them down, but it was kind of hard to make out like what the words meant. Because again, it's kind of like I don't know if it's Sumerian, because like she pulls out one of those ritual books from her mom's box of stuff that says mom's stuff, and it looks like it's Hebrew, so I don't know what it is. Yeah, it was like all written in Hebrew, but I don't know if it's like Phoenician or if it's Sumerian. I have no idea.
Okay.
It's definitely not Latin, I can tell you that much.
You speak Latin?
When you're a biologist, you kind of pick up on these Latin things. Because everything was kind of named in Latin, and you kind of had to know Latin to be a scientist before 1990, so.
Okay, so before, I figured where was that? Yeah, so she gets freaked out, right, with all this going on with the seance. So she's trying to leave. Before she leaves, Joan gives her, I think she gave her the candle. I know she went over to like her desk or something. She pulled out a piece of paper and told her that if she wants to do it on her own, that, you know, she has to have the candle lit. Everyone has to be around. So her husband and Peter need to be inside the house in order for it to work, and that she needs to recite whatever's on the paper. It's in a language. She said she didn't know what it was, but she said the spirit medium gave it to her and told her that this, I think she said it gets things started, I think is what she told him, told Annie. So then after Annie's, you know, driving back home, there is like a clicking sound that she hears, and she stops the car coming from the back seat, but there's nobody there. So we jump to Annie, you know, she's in bed laying down, and she starts seeing ants on her side of the bed. When she gets up to look around, she sees that the ants are starting to come through the window in her room. So she gets up and goes out into the hallway. We see that there is a trail of ants leading into Peter's room. And she sees, when she gets to the foot of Peter's bed, she can see his body. He's dead. There's ants like all over his face. It looks like ants were like coming out of his mouth. And then we can hear Peter's voice. And we learned that Annie was just sleepwalking. And she apologizes to Peter, and then she asks, you know, if Charlie was in his room, and then she tells Peter that she never wanted to be his mother, but then she like puts her hand over her mouth like she didn't mean to say it, and then she starts talking about, she said she pressured me, and then she tells him that she tried to have a miscarriage, and then this is when Peter starts crying, and we hear him repeatedly saying, you tried to kill me, and then you see Annie looks like she's doused, or she's like completely wet, which I'm assuming was like a dream from our flashback of when she had the paint thinner with the kids when they were younger. And then we hear like a match get struck, and as soon as the flames appear, she awakes up, and it was Annie. Looks like Annie was having a nightmare. Annie then goes to Peter's room, and then she wakes him up, tells him, apologizes to him, and said that she's sorry for everything she said. And then she gets him and Steve, her husband, to go downstairs, and she's attempts to get them to both join her in conjuring the spirit of Charlie. She tells her husband that she had conjured the spirit earlier and that it had worked, but she was by herself. So then she has them put their hands on the glass like Joan told her to do, and then asks Charlie to move it. At this point, Peter claims that he can feel that. He says the air flexing, and then the glass kind of just like slides away from him towards the middle of the table. And then Annie calls out to Charlie, asking her to show him what she did earlier. So Peter starts panicking, and Annie starts showing Steve Charlie's sketchbook, saying that the drawings had manifested inside the book earlier. Steve's getting upset. He starts yelling at Annie, telling her that she's scaring Peter. And as they're arguing, like a glass shatters behind them, and then like the flame and the candle just like shoots up, and Annie goes kind of like into like a trance-like state. And she just starts like kind of like quietly growling, and then she starts talking in a child's voice, asking like, "Mom, what's going on?" And she keeps talking in the kid's voice, and then Steve has to splash her with like water, and he turns the lights on, and basically Annie doesn't have knowledge of what just took place. And then we jump to Peter at school. Yeah, he notices that there's the a light moving around the classroom. No one else seems to notice it. It's like the same light that Charlie had saw in her room. Peter then happens to look over at like a bookcase in the classroom, and he can see his reflection. However, the reflection is making different facial expressions than he is, and he freaks out, and I think he left the class. And then we jump to Annie, who's at home. She's in her workshop working on her dioramas. Steve calls and tells her that, you know, her kid's having a breakdown at school, saying that, you know, he's paranoid, saying that there's a vengeful spirit after him. And I think Steve hung up on her, and then she called back, telling him not to hang up on him. And then
she gets the last word, and she's like, "Don't you hang up on me!"
And then hangs up on him, right?
And then hangs up on him. Classic. She really starts losing it at this point. She's super crackers at this point.
Super crackers.
She is crackers bananas.
And then she, was that supposed to be the art gallery that she was working on, this one that she destroys? I know it was a bunch of chairs, right?
Yeah, it was the art gallery, I think, the miniature art gallery of her miniatures. It's like an Inception.
Oh, she did have... See, I'm wondering, all those miniatures, she had like a hand brace, so she must have had like carpal tunnel from doing all this work.
Probably. I mean, did you see those glasses she had with the magnifier? I was like, damn, I need those glasses when I go to look at my plants for little pests.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, those look great. I mean, they look dorky as hell, but those would be super practical.
Yes, in your line, yes. Work. So yeah, it looked like she was trying to work under the chair, and then she accidentally breaks it, and then she just starts smashing up her diorama.
We call this a mini meltdown. That's what we call it.
A mini meltdown. Okay. Yeah, she breaks. Well, because she, in the background, we do hear her voicemail picking up, and it was that art gallery calling about postponing her the upcoming show that she was supposed to be at. So Steve and Peter end up coming home, and Steve finds Annie on the floor in her workshop with her project smashed up in the corner of the room. And I think when Steven asked her about what happened, she just said she got tired. I think she said she got tired of looking at it. And then we find that Steve takes medication too. And
well, that could be blood pressure medication for living with this fucking family.
So I was about to say, need meds.
This is the only problem. High blood pressure.
Seriously, trying to stay calm through all this shitstorm.
It's the silent killer.
Yeah.
He's like, I need to take my Bayer aspirin for my heart. One a day.
Child's aspirin.
Right.
Reduce your risk for heart attack.
Right, exactly. He needs it, man.
Annie goes to Charlie's room to look at her sketchbook on the bed. Annie goes to Charlie's room, and we can see her sketchbook is on the bed, and it opens up on its own. We then jump to Peter sleeping in his room, and he gets awakened by the tongue clicking sound again. And as he's looking around in his room, he sees Charlie against the wall, and you know, he calls out to her, and then her head just falls off and then turns into a ball as it rolls across the floor. At this point, the family dog is like standing in the doorway growling, and arms suddenly appear from like the head of Peter's bed that they pull him back down into the bed, and they're basically like just pulling at his head. Peter's apparently like he's struggling to breathe, and then like the door on its own closes to his room. Peter then sees his mother. She's like standing by the window in his room, and you know, the hands of her at this point are gone, and he tells her that you were trying to rip my head off, and that he saw Charlie in the room. Annie asks him, you know, where did he see Charlie, and then she tells him that she's the only one basically that can fix what's going on. And Annie goes to grab Charlie's sketchbook, which I think there was something with the faces. I can't remember.
When she was drawing Peter's face?
Book. Annie.
Yeah, she showed his eyes crossed out, and then his head was decapitated. And then his mole kept getting bigger on his face, which I think was unintentional. It's kind of like in that movie, I think it was like was it Princess Bride, where the mole keeps moving around on his face? Or maybe it's a Mel Brooks film. I think it's Mel Brooks.
Was it? Yeah.
Yeah. It was Robin Hood. Men in Tights.
Men in Tights, yep.
Yeah, where the mole keeps changing places on his face.
It's like Igor's hump moving around.
Well, no, it's like first on his forehead, and then it's on his chin, and then it's on his nose. But it's so subtle because it's like, so many scenes far apart. And you're just like, at first you're like, wait, wasn't the mole somewhere else?
Right.
Anyways, I need some comic relief for this fucking movie. This movie is really starting to get really sad and terrible.
It is, yeah.
This is where it really ramps up with creep factor, and it's just all downhill from here.
Okay. We do see at one point, right, that Peter was at his school outside, and then he'd seen... It was just a different woman, right? Or was it Joan? Do we know? It was another woman, though.
Outside.
It was Joan. Okay.
Yeah. She was yelling the incantation at him, I think.
That's right. Klaatu, Narata.
No, I think that's
the wrong movie. Yeah.
Satoni, Zaza, Slivko, Pandemonium, get out. I did look up the words, and they are from all different languages.
You didn't say them.
One of them is Latin, though. Pandemonium is Latin, but the other one is Hebrew. So I was right on that one.
But you didn't say them out loud, did you?
I just said them right now.
Oh, okay.
So we're about to have a good night. What's that on my wall?
And it just goes dead. Okay. So Annie does go back to Joan's place. That's before that. Okay. So at the house, Annie tosses the sketchbook into the fireplace, and as the book starts to burn, we notice that Annie's arm catches on fire, so she quickly takes the book back out and stomps the fire out. And after the book is no longer burning, we see that the fire went out on her arm. Peter was getting ready to leave the house, and this is kind of weird that he, you know, he notices that the door to his parents' room was slightly open, and we see that Annie was in her room just staring at him through the door before he was leaving, like she was just watching him. And then we find Annie goes to Joan's house, knocking on her door, but the house is kind of dark inside. There's nobody's home. As the camera goes through, you know, Joan's house, we see there's like a ritual set up. There's like candles and some of Charlie's stuff is on the table, like the toy that she built or that was playing with in school, and the bird's head, and I think there was a picture too. But definitely some ritualistic stuff going on inside Joan's house. At this point, then Joan or Annie does look down, and she's really looking now at the floor mat and looking at the designs, and she just like gasps, like she realizes something clicks. She starts going back through her stuff, her mom's stuff that she had in boxes, and this is when she starts pulling out the different floor mats or welcome mats that had, there was one for Annie, Charles, I think they were all the similar designs. So she starts going through like the different books that her mother had. One of them did have that same symbol that was on the grandmother's necklace. And she starts going through the book, and it is written in a different language. There's a book that she opens called Invocations. And there is one part of the book that had that was highlighted. And it's talking about the God of Mischief, this King Paimon.
I'm sorry, what?
the section, the invocation, the book, the king is a Paimon?
Okay. I always said Paimon, but I don't know if that's the correct.
It could be Paimon.
I don't know. I'm not going to say you're wrong.
You'd be better than me.
I've never heard Paimon before, but maybe that's
Paimon. Paimon?
Yes, it's Paimon. I think in the book, it's highlighted that it needs a male host, which I think is pretty important, which is probably why they highlighted. They're like, oh yeah, don't forget that part.
Yeah, it says that we'll possess the most vulnerable host.
Vulnerable male host.
Complete. Yeah, so it says when the ritual is complete, then King Paimon?
Sure.
Is that how you say it? Paimon? Paimon. I'm going to mess it up now. Paimon. Be locked.
You got to pay the man.
Host. And then it says, like, once locked in, a new ritual is required to unlock the possession and
the riches of the world.
You're right. Yeah, as a male, thus covetous of a male human body.
Mm-hmm. Which, out of all of the males in this movie so far, gotta say, Peter, pretty vulnerable.
It's the childlike crying.
Yeah, it's the blur.
So Annie finds a photo album. And as she's going through it, she starts to realize that Joan is in pictures with her mother and all these other people who look like they're attending some type of rituals that are occurring. And some of the scenes, the grandmother or her mother is like in the middle. There's all these people around her. Like
Hey, they look like they're having fun. They look like they know how to have a party. They got her up on a chair. They're throwing coins at her. She's got some Mardi Gras beads on. Right. They're having a good time.
Completely misunderstood group of people.
I know, right? I think this movie is just misunderstood entirely.
Exactly.
I think Paimon is actually just the god of parties.
He's the party god.
They just wanted to say
mischief,
forever.
So mischief could be kind of...
Yeah, they're just being mischievous. They're like getting naked, you know?
Right.
So maybe they just wanted to party all the time. That was like their afterlife, was just partying it up with each other. Party. They just needed a sacrifice for that, though.
Yes. There's a quick scene of Peter at school, and he sees that light again going down the hallways. And then we catch up with Steve, who he was sending an email about his wife, saying that he was worried. I think the email was incomplete because it says, yeah, that he was worried that Annie might be on the verge of or in the middle of, and then he gets an email. So he disregards his.
I think he was emailing the art show gallery to like kind of extend the deadline.
Ah, so he's looking out for her.
Yeah, I think that's why he was sending the email. It was just kind of like, hey, you know, she just lost her mom and her daughter. Like, things ain't going too well. I'm sure you guys understand. You guys need those TPS reports, but those ain't getting to you anytime soon. So I think he was emailing them on her behalf.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. So I don't think it was like he was going to like admit her to a psych ward or anything like that. I don't think they do that over email.
Not yet.
They're like, hey, can you Snapchat me? It'd be a lot more convenient.
So he had while he was typing the email, he gets another one from a cemetery, and that's talking about the an insurance claim. Yes, of the mother's, so that'd be his mother-in-law's gravesite.
Mm-hmm.
And
they completely dug up her grave.
Bastards.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we go back to Annie at the house, and she goes up into the attic, and we can hear like flies buzzing around. There's clearly like a foul odor, and she finds a body. It was supposed to be the mother's body, I'm assuming, right?
Yeah,
it was just decapitated. Yeah. So she said she couldn't tell whose it was.
Yeah, I thought it was Charlie's at first, but I'm pretty sure they didn't put Charlie in a silk gown,
right? Yeah, the body was basically just black. Yeah, she had like and there was like a candle at her feet lit. And so then we jump back to Peter at school. He's freaking out. He starts hearing the clicking sound that Charlie would make. And yep. And he goes to raise his hand in a odd position.
It's almost like he's a puppet.
Yeah.
Like somebody's controlling his body. Like
is it a marionette? Would that be?
Yeah. He kind of looks like a marionette because his lip is kind of drawn up too, as if like somebody's pulling a string on his lip.
Ooh, yes.
Looks very creepy. I don't know how they must have CGI'd that because that looked very, or maybe they like put some glue on his lip to have it like hold in place like that.
Yeah.
His like eye was all like bulging and shit. I was like, oh, I don't like this scene at all. And then it just gets worse from here.
It's just allergic reaction. Yeah, and then he just
right. It's starts, allergic reaction. Bad pot had nuts in it. Right. Who put nuts in this pot?
Yeah, his head just starts getting. He's slamming into his desk, and after the second slam into the desk, he like snaps out of it, just freaking out, scaring everybody in the class. He's got blood. He's just screaming.
I was in high school once in a class. It was a very boring class. It was like U.S. government. Somebody, one of a guy that I knew, started having a seizure in the middle of class. Dude was not epileptic at all. Just randomly started having a seizure. It was the craziest thing I've ever seen in my life. Wow.
Jeez.
Yeah, me and my friend just like booked it right to him and like held his head to keep him from hitting his head. And then like one of us just ran to the nurse to grab one of the nurses to come and get him. But he like came out of it within a couple minutes and he looked like kind of dazed and confused. He was like, what happened? Why is everybody around me?
Oh, okay.
It was so strange because I knew this kid my whole life, like from when we were in elementary school, never had a seizure once in his life until we were in high school.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It was very strange. Not like this though. He didn't like slam his head on the table. But well, he was thrashing around. We had to like move all the chairs out of the way.
Oh yeah, they sometimes start like fighting, or there was a postictal, is what they call it, when they come out of it.
That I'm not too sure. I just know that you're supposed to kind of hold their head in place so they don't like get a head injury. So that's just what we did. We just laid him down on the ground. I just kind of held his head in place on my lap.
Yeah,
we never supposed to put your hands in their mouth.
No, or stick anything in there. Yeah,
right, because they can end up chewing some bits off and suffocating.
Yes.
Anyways. This was not what was going on with this dude. He was possessed.
Yes, a little bit different, but...
Yeah, a little bit different. Just a little bit.
So then, back at the house, Annie is standing outside in the rain while the school is calling about, you know, what happened with Peter. So Steven, who was inside, took the call. So he goes and picks up Peter, who's, you know, his face is all bandaged up now. So once he gets back home... or once they get into the house, Annie tells Steve about, you know, what she found in the attic. And I think, I don't know if at this point, Steve is just going along with it, but really thinking, you know, that of course, because I think he tells, like, of course there is, or about the body being up there.
I love his reaction from here on out. Right. He's just so fucking done with this. He's like, sure, whatever. Let's go take a look at your mom's dead body upstairs.
Didn't even hesitate.
Get this over with. Let's go. He's just trying to get through the day, man.
Yeah. He's like, you know, yeah, what was that up there? He's telling her that we need to call the police. And then, you know, Annie just starts talking about Joan and saying that, talking about the seance and about how she brought, you know, her grandson back and everything. And she starts showing Steve the book and the pictures. And he basically just accused her of Steve accuses his wife of digging up the grave of his mother or her mother. And, you know, Annie's calling him out, saying that he doesn't believe her, that he doesn't trust her. And she tells Steve that basically what's going on is that there's a pact that happened, and that what she did was basically a curse that was brought onto the family, and that they brought Charlie back, and that, you know, whatever it is now it's in the house, and that basically what she did is it Peter's in danger. And she tries to tell Steve about her burning her arm and that she can't do it because of the book. And so she tells her husband to do it, to throw the book into the fire because she can't do it. Right. And she's just blaming herself for what happened. And that, you know, if he doesn't do this, that it's going to go after Peter. So she had the fire already set up. Okay. I know he burst into flames, but
yeah.
So she was saying that, because she knows that when she throws the book into the fire, she's going to, what is it called? When you set yourself on fire for self-immolation.
Yeah.
She's going to immolate, essentially. And so she has to die, right? The book has to be destroyed in order to stop this. And she knows she's going to die in the process. It's kind of like the Horcrux, right? Is that if you destroy the book, you destroy yourself. So she's telling him, like, hey, go ahead and throw this book in there. But I think at one point we switched off, right? The light did something, and
yeah,
whatever was bound to her was now bound to Steve. And I don't know what caused that. I would have to like go back and see more further, but something caused the light to shift. And she didn't realize, like, when they would throw the book in there, that Steve would catch on fire, essentially. And so that's what he said, I'm not doing this shit, like, I'm done,
right?
I'm not playing around with your games anymore. So she was the one that ended up throwing in the fire. But I forgot what caused Steve to now be tied to the book. I forgot what that was.
Yeah, because then he burst in the flames.
I think he was like, I don't remember correctly, but I think he was like looking at the book that Charlie was drawing in, and when he was looking at the book, the light was over him. It like just passed right over him. And I think that's when it shifted. I think when he was having a connection with the book, that's when it changed off. And so from then on there, that's where he was tied. His body was tied to that book.
Okay.
Yeah. Cause you do see that light kind of show up, and it does mean something.
Right.
But I think that light was like kind of shimmering in the room when he was looking at the book of Charlie's drawings.
Yeah, it was like real subtle, quick.
It was, yeah. That light is pretty subtle.
Yeah,
throughout the film. It's kind of like in like Donnie Darko, where that like little wormhole thing kind of like guides you throughout.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of like that, but not as obvious.
Yeah, and then they even though like outside, when they show the outside of the house when it, you know, it was daytime, and then it just like someone turned light, it just like jumps to night. So yeah, it was nighttime. Peter wakes up. You know, he can see the light from the heaters inside the treehouse, and then he goes downstairs and he finds his dad's body, or charred body. And
my question
then
is, how did he sleep through that? And does this family have an alarm system?
He took
like a smoke alarm system?
Melatonin.
I mean, I have slept through smoke alarms, so I guess it is possible.
Yeah, he wasn't getting much sleep the last few days.
That's true. He did like smash his face into a table, so that might do it.
Oh, concussion.
Maybe. I mean, he did break his nose. I don't know about that, but
yeah. So he eventually makes his way up into the attic, and he finds the spot where Annie found the body. But now the corpse is missing. We do see the outline of where the body was, And there was like candles all around it. So while he's in there, he starts hearing, he starts talking to himself because he thinks he's dreaming. And he starts hitting himself in the face, telling him like basically to wake up. And then we can hear like a sawing or a sawing sound. And when he looks up, he sees his mother in the air floating. And it wasn't really clear at first. I think the way she's moving her hands back and forth, kind of like a dance move. But she was sawing her own head off. And
okay, so this scene where we start seeing naked people show up. And we see somebody standing in the corner and they're smiling. Oh, fuck no. I would, no.
Mm-mm. Yeah, there's like three of them, right? Like,
yeah.
Two or four. The first one, though, like with the smile, it's so creepy. Yes. Like, that's what gets me at night. Like, that's what I think about before I go to bed.
Naked smiling people? Standing. Oh.
But it's so creepy. It's kind of like that movie Smile where it's very sinister. And all you see are the teeth and the eyes. Ugh, just thinking about it makes me all squirmy. And then, yeah, when she's scary, like, yeah. It's very disturbing. Yeah. And then when she's sawing off her head, she's like going kind of slow, like with a rhythm. And then she starts like speeding up.
Yes. Very choreographed.
It's very disturbing. Yeah, those effects were pretty good.
Yeah, so he basically says, yeah, F that, and jumps out the out the window. So when he lands outside, it looks like he may be dead, but then there is like, is it the light goes into him, into like his back?
No, he did. He did. Yeah. So he has to die for the light to go into him.
Okay.
Cause now the light can go into a male host.
That's right. Okay. So then he sees his mom floating into ascending
into the treehouse with her headless body.
Into the treehouse.
She's just kind of like getting teleported to without a head. It's very disturbing. I'm just going to keep saying that this whole time from here on out. Very disturbing.
Yeah, we're laughing. But it's scary shit.
It is disturbing. Yeah.
That's how bad it is. Yeah. Is me laughing. I'm just uncomfortable the whole time.
Yeah, and we do get another shot of like other naked, creepy people standing in the woods.
Oh, everyone's naked.
Looking at them. And,
and everyone's old too. Which is weird. I'm like, worse. You guys don't have like some young people that like joined your cult, or is it only people from like the 60s, from like the Manson era?
There's a few inside the treehouse.
Yeah, they're like 47.
No, well, once they get in the treehouse, when you get to that part, I'll tell you. How's that?
Oh, okay. Yeah, point it out to me.
Yeah. Okay, so yeah, he goes inside the treehouse, and there's basically a bunch of people inside, naked. They're almost like in a praying position, right? Like on all fours.
Yeah.
And he's just looking around.
And if you notice, one of the guys that's like on all fours, you know, bowing down or whatever.
Is it Ari Aster?
No. It was one of his buddies that he smoked weed with.
Oh, wait, hold on. Which one?
The one with the long hair.
Kid?
The one with the long hair.
Really?
The one with the long hair. Mm-hmm. Trying to remember. Was he the one that they were smoking under the bleachers with?
Yeah.
That was like right next to him when he had the panic attack?
No.
Really? Him?
No. The one with long hair, he's sitting across from him when they were under the bleachers.
Okay, but how did he get into this?
I don't know.
So he was a plant?
Could be. He's in the cult, so I don't know.
Huh. Interesting. They must have like deleted a scene or something that explained that more, because that kind of seems like a random plant. But yeah, it is a pretty cool nod to see like how many people this whole time were in on it.
It was all
I thought maybe like the director was one of the people.
That would be hilarious.
That's what you were gonna say.
They orchestrated the whole thing.
You're like, is that Octavia Spencer in the background?
And so inside the treehouse, Peter does he sees the statue figure of what's the name again? King.
These are called effigies.
Effigy. A wooden effigy?
A wicker man. Yeah.
Not the bees.
Exactly. Well, not the ants.
Oh, yeah. And I'm sure the hands, because it kind of reminded me of Baphomet, the way the right hand has two fingers pointing down, but
Mm-hmm.
The left hand's holding like a staff, but the staff, I don't know, looked like a hand, like a claw or something at the top.
And maybe it was a rake. They did what they could with what they had. There's like a garden rake. They're like, well,
poorly funded.
You know, we found this head on the side of the road, found a rake here and there. This is the best we can do for Lord Payman.
And there is a bird, a bird cage inside. And then
with a live bird, I think. There's like,
yeah,
a bird.
It was live.
Around,
yeah,
right?
It was flying.
Oh,
around.
Okay.
Yeah. So then he notices at the foot of the effigy, it is Charlie's corpse, or is it the grandmother's corpse? The corpse from
the
mom attic.
And the grandma.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, the headless
Charlie's
mom.
Head is on the effigy. Like, that's her head.
Oh, see.
Yeah, it's all like contorted. It's like twisted because she got hit by a pole, and then it's all like decayed too. But yeah, that's her head. Which I was reading online that the little like bird head that she cut off. She actually, those dolls in her room, those were like King Payman that she was creating. And so she used the bird's head for the little doll. So, wow. Yeah.
So Peter does notice on the wall there is a portrait or picture of the grandmother, and it says Queen Lee, her name. And then someone was behind him. They start moving around and they put the crown on his head. Right?
Yeah,
and Peter, I was at this point, I was trying to make all jokes possible to kind of lighten the mood. I was like, wouldn't it be funny if that was like a Burger King crown?
That's exactly what I thought. Oh man,
it looks so flimsy. So unfortunately, it took me a really, really embarrassing long time to realize that this is not Peter anymore. Oh. And then they started talking to him, saying Charlie, and I'm like, oh my god, it's Charlie's soul in Peter's body.
In
this
Peter's
makes
body.
Sense. Yeah, that I didn't realize that the light that went into his body was actually Charlie's light.
See?
Yeah.
Yeah. They start referring to him as King, right? King Paimon, and that his position in hell, right?
Yeah, one of the eight demons to Baphomet or something like that.
Right. Okay. Talking about the female host into the female body into the male host.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think they tried to do it with, they tried first with Annie's brother, but he committed suicide because they were fucking with him.
Putting people inside him.
They were putting people inside of him. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, they're all, the worshippers are all, they're chanting Hail, Paimon. And, then we get a outside view as if it was like the miniature again, the way it opened, and we can see all the people basically like worshiping Paimon, and then it just ends.
The end.
That's the end. That's it. Paimon.
Did you guys wait until the end credit scenes where they have all the bloopers?
was there a blooper?
I'm kidding.
There could be. I mean,
it would be funny if there they had like some really funny bloopers. They're like kicking Charlie's head around like a soccer ball.
Oh my god. It's not a director's cut.
She's like sawing off her head, but she's like making weird noises like you know that shit went down. Like, that's how they had to process this whole movie.
Definitely.
Just that's what I miss about like buying physical copies of DVDs is having access to that stuff that is now like, I guess that was like the original kind of paywall, right? Where you had to buy the film to get all the bonus content. But man, nobody, I feel like I can't access that bonus content anymore.
4 hours of bonus content.
You can, I know recently I looked up on YouTube, only because somebody else mentioned it, like at what point in movies, I mean, they must have always had mistakes or bloopers. So we just started looking it up, and they have like movies with like James Cagney blooper reels, and they're pretty funny to watch. Like, what? I would have never thought of it.
Yeah.
It's recorded somewhere.
I mean, I guess you would really need somebody. I think they would hire somebody to film the production, and then they would create the blooper reel, right? because you have to film the movie, but then you have to hire someone to film them filming the movie and all the behind the scenes stuff. Wow, so right. They must have like contracted that out to somebody, and then that person would just give them content that they can then slap on their DVD and be like, you know, bonus content to drive sales and stuff like that.
Yeah, I could see that.
All right. This is the part of the show where we do our ratings and reviews, and we do great on a 10 scale, 0 being awful and 10 being great. Yeah, we usually tag on a little funny or scary or, I don't know, description of our rating. And this week's movie was picked by yours truly, so I get to go last. And I guess we'll let Azrael go first, since he's been talking. We'll let him finish off.
So this was my second time watching this movie. I know the first time I watched it, I really enjoyed it, you know, but seeing it a second time, I realized there's a lot of stuff that I missed. And, you know, even going through this, you know, walkthrough again or play by play, you know, and Ariel pointing out a lot of stuff, like I even missed that stuff. So I think, you know, this is definitely a movie you can watch probably multiple times and still find something that you missed. I think the director, you know, my hat's off to him because he did a really good job with that. There's stuff just hidden like all over the film. I would say that this, for me, it's rare that I would say a modern or like anything in the last 20 years as far as horror films is ever anything that I would consider as like great. But this one for sure, I think is like an instant classic modern horror film. I think just one of the biggest things I like is the way the film just builds up to this ending that I kind of figured there was a cult aspect, but it wasn't what I was expecting at the end. And I really enjoy the film. I like it a lot. So with that, I would give this movie 8.9 dead bird decapitations.
Hopefully that wasn't Ariel's.
I try to pick something different.
I guess I'll have to pick something else. I'm kidding. No, there's so many to choose from, right? So
this was like my fourth option. So the other three I didn't go with because.
Now I'm curious to see what the other four are. All right, I will. Oh, man. All right, so I think my review is going to be short just because the rating kind of says it all from my perspective. I don't feel like I really need to go into detail why I love this movie. I give this movie a 10 out of 10 effigies of King Paimon. And I don't know, everything, it's like a masterpiece. I don't throw that word around lightly. I hardly consider many movies to be masterpieces. Even people that say like, oh, this is this director's, you know, what do they call it? The magnus opus, you know, or whatever, magma opus. Even those I don't really consider masterpieces, but this one is so well balanced in everything. The acting, the cinematography, the effects, the score, just everything about it. Like, I cannot find a single thing wrong with it. And I don't think I've ever heard anyone say anything bad about this film. Like, the only thing that came close was, it just wasn't for me, right? Yeah. But I can't find any holes in this film. It's perfect, in my opinion. So that's all I got to say about this one.
All right. 10 out of 10. That's good. I think we covered a lot of it during the play-by-play, and I totally agree with both of y'all. I mean, the acting in this movie from everybody, especially Toni Collette, was outstanding. The atmosphere of the movie is kind of keeps you feeling dread the whole way through. It's very emotional. A lot of the subjects in the movie can hit close to home for some people. It's a lot of drama, but the horror aspect of it too is it's kind of woven in to where it kind of hits you right at the end, which is great. I like that. And yeah, you have to watch this movie. If you've seen it, you're like, well, I've seen it and I liked it. You should watch it again. It's like, you know, look for stuff in the background. Look for the symbols that show up, the cult symbols that show up. They show up a lot in the movie, and you can just count them in little different things. The colors, the color blue, you know, you see it come up a lot in this movie. Just different things, you know, for you to explore when you watch the movie. I will give this 9 flaming Steves out of 10.
That sounds like a drink that you would have at a party. Give me a flaming Steve.
Right. It's like a flaming mo.
It's like Gabriel Burns behind the bar. He's like, here do you go. Here's a flaming Steve for you.
You crazy fucker.
Yeah, laddie.
All right. That's Hereditary. I'm glad we finally got to do it. I love that movie.
Yes. Thank you.
Yes. Yeah.
Welcome, welcome. No, just kidding. All right. If you got any thoughts about this movie or any other movie we covered or have ideas about what we should cover, you can always get a hold of us at storiestodismember@gmail.com or find us on social medias. Just search Stories to Dismember. We should pop up everywhere. Or you can even Google Stories to Dismember. We'll pop up and you can find us there. You can send us a text message at 817-405-4196. We always love to hear from you guys. And this was the first movie in our mother horror movie theme. That sound right? Mother horror movie theme. Horror mother movie. Yeah, the horror mother.
Horrors.
What is it? No, I'm just kidding.
Horrible
mother. Horrible mother movie, horror movie theme. Yeah. Something like that. It's kind of like the American Dodgeball Association of America. Yeah. Horror mother, horrible horror mother movie, horror theme. All right. Our next movie is going to be an aerial pick, and it's going to be a 2007 movie, Mother of Tears. Looking forward to that. Is that
which is Dario Argento's third installment of his Three Mothers trilogy, which I know means nothing to you guys.
Based really? On the silence. Crickets. The third one? What were the first two?
So the first one I think was The Bird with the Crystal Plumage, and then the second one was Cat o' Nine Tails. And then the third one was Mother of Tears. And so I just watched Bird with the Crystal Plumage, and I have not seen Mother of Tears, and I have not seen Cat o' Nine Tails. So I do have to get caught up with those ones to see what the arc is with why these are like the three, because they're so far apart. Like, he did the Bird with the Crystal Plumage in like the early 70s, wow. And then he did Mother of Tears in 2007. So.
Oh, wow.
It's kind of like Simon Pegg and Nick Frost doing their Cornetto kind of trilogy, you know, which is probably where they got kind of the inspiration for it, to be honest. I don't know. I feel like the Mother of Tears, though, came out way after, maybe not way after Shaun of the Dead. But anyways.
All right. Sounds interesting. Is it closed captioned?
Well, like most Dario, actually, like all Dario Argento films, it's probably going to be spoken in various different languages and dubbed over in English with ADR.
Okay.
Oh.
And some of the actors probably will be speaking English, and some of them will speak German, and some of them will speak Italian. But being that it's 2007, it'll probably just be in English and spoken in English.
And it's on Tubi. Shout out.
Yeah, I feel like all his movies are on Tubi, to be honest. Little known about the giallo genre in horror, but I'm excited because we haven't seen it, so it'll be new for all of us.
All right. Sounds fun. Can't wait to see it and talk about it next week with you guys. Well, that's all I have. Guess I'll say goodnight or good morning or good afternoon, whenever you're listening to this. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye. Thank you for listening to the Stories to Dismember podcast. Please be sure to tell your friends, subscribe, and leave a rating. You can contact us at storiestodismember@gmail.com, and we'd love to hear from you. You can also follow us on TikTok at Stories to Dismember. The music for Stories to Dismember is provided by Windfeather. We can't wait to hang out with you next time. Bye-bye.